Today is Wednesday, February 12th, or 12th day of the month of Adar 1. This is the Chumash Shir up to Bereshit Perek Vav. Okay, Rabotai, we're up to Bereshit Perek Vav. Dedicating the Shir to the yard site of Shema Yitzli Ben Yisrael. Our learning should be a zechut, a merit on his behalf. We're up to Bereshit Perek Vav. Perek Vav. Now, this would be a good time to indicate just something that we've mentioned before, but this is a perfect illustration of this. The way Rashi interpreted the last pasuk of Lamed Bet, the last pasuk of Perek Hei, as to why Noach delayed having children until he was 500 years old. So Rashi says he already anticipates the Mabul and says to himself, why am I having children to bring in children who will be destroyed? If that's the case, the beginning of this unit is not Perek Vav Halacha Mit Pasuk Aleph, because this particular perek is the introduction to the Mabul, and we're going to see a powerful statement of the Ramban that perhaps the people already deserved to die to some extent, or deserve to be punished earlier than the Mabul. It's right here already, and Rashi is alluding to that. That's why Noach, he sees that people are acting so inappropriately. Why bother having children? So the designations of the Prakim, as you well know, are not of Jewish origin. If you want to know if a new topic is taking place, you look at Pasuk Lamed Bet, there is a Stuma. A Stuma. There is a gap in the Sefer Torah of 9 letters. And you see it's indicated in your Chumash. I hope it is, that there is a gap. And it's on the same line. The next topic, Perek Pasuk Lamed Bet, starts on the same line as Pasuk Lamed Aleph does. And that indicates that in the Sefer Torah, the line is closed. But in order to indicate that there is a new topic, there is a gap of 9 letters. There are 2 ways to communicate that. Either the gap of 9 letters, or a psucha. Psucha means that the line is left empty, and then the next topic begins on the next line. That's the way we identify new units, not the way prakim are divided up. And you can see that Vayhi Noach ben Chamesh Sheshana is the beginning of a new unit, and Rashi sees that, and therefore claims that that is the reason why he delayed having children until his 6th century of his life, whereas all the others waited about 100 years plus in order to have children. That's what may have tipped off Rashi to make that point, seeing the gap in the Sefer Torah, knowing full well that this indicates a new topic, and that which follows is connected to it, not that which precedes it. Yeah. Well, Rashi answered that question, that by the time the Mabul would come, they would be below age 20. Rashi says they would be below age 100. Okay, because Rashi claims that for some reason, we don't know where he got this from, that the standard as to when God would punish people is only 100 and above. So therefore, he had the children and had them protected not to suffer God's wrath. That's correct. Even though we don't believe that, we believe that God punishes at age 20, not age 100. But maybe if you live till 500, that's why he can afford to wait till then. If you live until 100, you got to punish earlier. Yes. No. That was prompted based on a phrase in the Midrash, in the text. Me'a shana, ve'esrim shana, ve'sheva shanim. Rashi, the Torah could have said, me'a ve'esrim shana. Why the word shana 3 times? That's what prompts Rashi there at the beginning of Chayasara. So now we're going to see the beginning of Perek Vav. It's a very difficult episode to explain. Extremely difficult. So I'm going to read the first two, I'll just read the unit. Let's read the unit just to get a flow of what's happening. Vayihi ki hechel ha'adam l'rov al pnei adama. As man began to populate this earth, ubanot yuldu lohem, and they had girls. Oh, big chiddush. We know that they've been having girls all along. Because if they didn't have any girls, there would have been no boys been born. And everybody had children. So they must have been girls. We didn't identify too many of them, but they must have been girls. Vayir'u b'neiho Elohim et b'nota adam ki tovoteina. And the children of Elohim, I'm not translating it yet, saw these daughters, that they were very good, very appealing, very attractive. Vayikhu lohem nashim mikol asher bacharu. And they selected wives from amongst anyone who they chose. Just reading the text. Vayomer Hashem, lo yadon ruchi ba'adam la'olam. My spirit will no longer be prevalent in man forever. It was never forever, but it was for several hundred years. God says right here, there's going to be a fundamental change. No longer are we going to see people living to 500 years, 800 years. My spirit will not. And actually, the way should it, the phrase that should have been read is, the next word should have been, V'hayu yamav me'av esrim shana. His years will be limited to what? 120. Bishagam hu basar is really an interrupting of that particular phrase. It says, lo yadon ruchi ba'adam li'olam. Man will not have my spirit within him forever. Well, what will happen? V'hayu yamav, his days will only be what? 120. The phrase is interrupted with a comment by the editor, namely HaKadosh Baruch Hu, saying, you know what? They are human, and hence I understand why they're not perfect. I am judging them now. I'm going to punish them. Why am I going to punish them? Because they acted inappropriately. We didn't say what they did inappropriately. Rashi and the Midrash and the Ramban will fill it in. But based on their inappropriate behavior, God has made a fundamental decision. He is no longer going to what? Allow them to live 800 years. It's going to be 120. But, you know what? They really perhaps deserved something else. And I'm going to delay that for a while. Bishagam hu basar. I understand he's also flesh. Namely, he's not just ruchi. Man is not just a spirit. If he was just a spirit in the manner of emulating God's spirit, he would never transgress. But because he is flesh and blood, and he has desires and inappropriate thoughts and inappropriate behavior, so some I understand why he's gone off the derech. But nonetheless, I'm going to punish him so that he will be, his maximum will be only 120. Now I'm just reading the unit. Hanefilim hayu ba'aretz bayom lahem. The giants were on the land that day. V'gam achreichein ashi yavo b'nei olim b'noto adam. Also, after these b'nei ho Elohim married or came onto the daughters of man, v'yoldu lohem heima hagibarim asher me'olam anshe Hashem. These nephilim also had relations with these young women and gave birth to whom? Giborim, who became worldwide anshe Hashem, well known throughout the world. And that's the end of the unit. Okay? So obviously it needs a little salt and pepper. So let's begin with Rashi, as we always do. I distributed to you two sheets of the Ramban. The Ramban is going to be critical because he introduces several important elements of thinking, philosophical elements as well. Thank you.
Is anybody else? Two sheets or back-to-back?
It's one sheet with two sides. So we start with Rashi. First issue is, who are these B'nai HaElohim? Who are they? B'nai HaElohim. So there are two interpretations, and what lead to the two interpretations is the word Elohim. The word Elohim can be translated in several ways. So let's see how Rashi charges. B'nai HaElohim. Simple pshat. Heim hasarim hahochim b'shlichuto shel makom. These are the ministers whose assigned task is to fulfill a message of God. God believes in justice. God believes in law and order. God believes in civil law and respect. Respect for property, respect for human beings. That's what God believes in. Hamishpat le'Elohim hu. Judgment is one of God's primary tasks. So when you have ministers and judges who are assigned that particular task, you are now identified as B'nai HaElohim, the children of God, children who are capable, talented, who should be filling God's mission of law and order, of civil justice. That's one interpretation. No, then it's Elohim. B'nai HaElohim. These people are, it could be Elohim, but they are men of, they're the children of the judges. They're not the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They are the children of the judges. Why are these people called Elohim? Because judges throughout the Chumash are called Elohim. Always. It says it dozens of times. V'higisho Adonav El HaElohim. When you have a slave who wants to stay more than 6 years, he says, "Ahavti et Adoni et Ishti ve'et Banai lo etzei chavshi." I don't want to leave after 6 years. So the Torah says, "V'higisho Adonav, his masters to bring El Ho Elohim," means to bring him to Bezdin. Or when two people are quarreling, it says, "Ad Ho Elohim Yavo Devar Shnehem," bring the two sides to Elohim, to God. Here it means people who are doing the work of God, and these are their children. The children of these people, and then we'll see what they do. That's one interpretation. That's the simple pshat. In which case, it's read Elohim, and more importantly, when the Sofer writes the word, he does not have in mind to sanctify it as the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He does not have in mind to sanctify, because it's not referring to God. It's referring to judges who are doing the work of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Davar Acher.
You mean B'nai Elohim is referring to judges?
No, excuse me. I skipped the line of the Rashi. B'nai Elohim, B'nai HaSarim V'HaShoftim. That's the simple pshat. That these children are Sarim V'Shoft, ministers and judges. They are the children of minister judges. Davar Acher, the second shot is B'nai HaElohim, Heim HaSarim HaHolchim B'Shlichuto Shel Mako. Here, this refers to ministers who are doing God's work. So, in the first interpretation, when it refers to B'nai HaElohim, children of ministers and judges, it means Elohim is Chol, refers to ministers and judges. The second interpretation, it means ministers who are doing God's work. Then, B'nai HaElohim is what? Referring to who? To HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if that would be the correct interpretation, the Sofer, when he writes the word Elohim, has to have in mind that he's sanctifying it with Kedushat Hashem. Otherwise, the Sefer Torah would be puzzled. So, depending on the interpretation, which interpretation is correct, that would guide the Sofer what to do. The halacha is, in this particular case, that Elohim is not sanctified. Because the simple pshat is that it refers to sarim v'shoftim, children of ministers and judges. What?
Otherwise, how would you call
Hashoftim? B'nai Hashoftim?
No, they would not be B'nai Hashoftim.
Amcha.
How would you call them?
They would just say, Vahike, Chelad. What? Vayiru Ha'anashim. That's all. Doesn't have to say B'nai Elohim. That's a second interpretation.
This is a different Elohim than Bereshit Bara Elohim.
No, that Elohim, that's the, according to the first interpretation, it's a different Elohim. It means judges. And as I just quoted to you, two psukim in the Chumash, and there are many others, where the word Elohim means a judge. A human being who's a judge. The second interpretation, no, it means, B'nai, the judges are doing the work of God. And that's why, then it's the same Elohim as Bereshit. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt. That's why judges are called Elohim.
Right, so why does Rashi need two different interpretations?
Because he wants to know what the word Elohim really means. How do you translate the word Elohim as a judge or Elohim as God?
Right, okay.
So he just wants to let you know.
Right.
How do you translate the word?
Right.
So, there is a third interpretation that these B'nai Elohim are... they're alluded to in Pasuk Dalet. Hanifilim hayu ba'aretz. One of the famous midrashim around is that these B'nai Elohim are literally people, not people, beings that look like human beings, but were not born to a human mother. They came down from heaven. That's why they're called Nephilim. They fell down from heaven. What they are, I don't know. They're like all these movies that are coming out now with these idiotic movies, which, you know, the whole world's being destroyed by these whatever they are. Extraterrestrial in the vet, exactly, that's what they are. And therefore they are B'nai Elohim. They're really B'nai Elohim. Not judges who are doing God's work. They are B'nai Elohim. What that means, I can't explain it to you. But the Midrash certainly believes that, one of the famous Midrashim, and it's confirmed by the word Hanifilim. Hanifilim. Those that have fallen. Where have they fallen from? From the heavens.
So
and came down on earth.
To that interpretation, the Philim and B'nai Elohim are one and the same?
That is correct. That is correct.
And how does Rashi interpret the Philim?
No, Rashi interprets it somewhat differently. It means those who have toppled the world. Nephilim, those who have caused the demise of the world, not necessarily that whoever, that these people have, based on their behavior, have caused the demise of the world. Not referring to people who fell, who've fallen from heaven.
Okay, are they still the, if you live in B'nai Elohim, no matter what, still the same?
That is correct.
People?
That's or correct.
Right.
Yes.
And how could it lead to such devastating behavior if they're doing Elohim's work?
But that's just it. These people who were expected to do Elohim's work, these children are not doing God's work. They're doing just the opposite, as we'll see. What did they do? So there are lots of young daughters available. Yeah. Vayiru b'nei ha'olim et b'not ha'adam ki tovot heina vayikhu lohem nashim mikol asher bacharu. Okay? Doesn't seem like something so terrible. These young men saw the young girls, that they were particularly good, attractive, so they took these wives amongst all the who they selected. Doesn't seem so terrible. So we'll read Rashi, and he will describe how terrible this pasuk is really describing. Ah, that's good. It doesn't say that in the text. Let's take a look at Rashi. Omar Kitovo Sena. Omar Rabbi Yudan. Rabbi Yudan in the Medrash says, Tovos Ksiv. The word Tova is typically written Tet Vav Bet Hey. Tovot would be written what? Tet Vav Bet Vav Tav. But it's written without a Vav. It's written Chaser. Fact that it's written Chaser is there to teach you something. Something. Says Rashi. Kishahayu Mativin Osa Mikushetet Likanes Lechupa. As they were what? Beautifying them. Everybody knows the wedding is at 4 o'clock. What time do you have to be at the hall? 7:30 in the morning. Why? I'm having a facial, I'm doing this, I'm doing... Only those people in the room, not these people in the room. We come an hour before, maybe. Because the photographer says you better be there an hour before. That's it. So as they were being made beautiful, what happens? Hayagadol, somebody else, more powerful, Nichnas Uboalatchila. As she was being badekt for the wedding, somebody comes in, snatches her, and has relations with her. Has relations with her. Okay. Do you ever get that impression in the text? No. This is a medrash reacting to the fact that the word tovot, missing a vav, is telling me to reinterpret the word. It has to be reinterpreted. That's one interpretation.
And it has to be reinterpreted for the bad.
For the bad. Because look, because what has HaKadosh Baruch Hu said? I don't like what they're doing. You have to find something. In this case, we can't fault the Midrash. Otherwise, we don't understand next pasuk. Why is God suddenly saying, hey, you're only going to live 120 years? What changed from last perek when they're living 800 years to this perek when you're only going to live 120? So there's got to be some inappropriate behavior. So the Medrash is filling in the puzzle. I don't know whether this is exactly what happened, but that's what they suggest. Comment number two of Rashi. Mikol asher bacharu. They selected whoever they wanted. It's not a terrible phrase. That's what you normally do. You survey the field and you take whoever you want. So says Rashi, three comments. Af bi'ulat ba'al. They took women who have already been married, who've had relations already. Af hazachar. They engaged in homosexual behavior. Af habehema. They even engaged in what we call bestiality. Okay? So it was a real sick group of people. Real sick group of people.
How do they get that when it says Yekulam and Nashir?
No, they get that Mikol Asher Bachar. From everything. Mikol. Every type of a human encounter that's possible. Mikol Asher Bachar. Every form of relationship that's possible. Married women, homosexuals, and animals. Mikol Asher Bachar.
Does Tovot has the Shorish
Gulin? Or it could be also the Shorish Tovot? No, that's what an ayin. That's what an ayin. This is Tovot, there's no doubt. Yeah.
This is all being done by the Nevi'im.
What? By these B'nei Ho'Elohim, whoever they are. By the B'nei Ho'Elohim. They're going around, so they come into a wedding hall, they see a young girl being prepared for wedding, they snatch her. Then they go around and do other things. And God is obviously not happy with any of this. With any of this.
And these are not humans.
No, we're operating with the fact that the simple pshat is these are children of or judges and ministers. Regular human beings. That's correct. Regular human beings.
So God is punishing the world forever for the sins of this.
Of these B'nai Hanan. That's correct. Good.
And then until everybody else.
So now, so hold on a second. So now let's take a look at the Ramban. Now you have a little background. Let's take a look at the Ramban. It's on page Peivav, on the beginning where it says Peivav on the top. I bracketed the Ramban for you. Says the Ramban. Vayhi kehechel ha'adam larov alpnei adamah. Ka'asher hizkir hakatuv noach ubanav. As the Torah in the previous pasuk introduced Noach and his children, viratza lehatchil binyan hamabul. Once I introduce Noach onto the scene, what's Noach's life centered around? The mabul. So immediately, what should I have done? I should have done Eile toldot Noach, the beginning of Parshas Noach, and describe what's going to happen. Says the Ramban, hold on a second. Amar ki miyad ka'asher heichelu bnei ha'adam larov heichelu lachato. Don't think that everything happened in an instant when Noach was during Noach's generation. No. As the population began to expand, they already demonstrated tendencies of transgression. Ve'amdu bichetam yamim rabim. And they continued to transgress for many, many days. Ad shahaya Noach ben dalud meot ushmonim shana. Until Noach was 480 years. Now, that means that the pasuk of the last parak, Vayhi Noach ben Chamesh Meot Shana, Noach is 500 years old, this event preceded it. Because all of these, we read about 10 generations of people who were born. We didn't find much spectacular. But every time, what did the Torah say? Vayoled Banim Banot. So there are lots of people around. And if you want to know what these people did when they had lots of children, this group of people introduced a form of behavior for these people. The Az Gazara Kadosh Baruch Hu, and at that time, after when Noah was 480 years, God made a decree, Shelo Yadun Rucho Bahem Liolam, that his spirit will no longer be perceptible in man forever. But so if that's the case, if he was very upset, why didn't he decide to bring the mabul right now? Why do it in stages? Says the Ramban, something very, very powerful. Very powerful. Avo ya'arich od lohem shanim ad shetimale sa'atam. Ad shetimale sa'atam. Does anybody know what sa'atam is? Okay. There is a grain measure in the Talmud called a sa'ah. Exactly. A sa'ah. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees a certain trend in people. And he has in mind, I'm very upset. But the punishment does not yet fit the crime. The punishment that he has in mind does not yet fit the crime. What's the punishment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has decided? What's in the back of his mind? The mabul. Destroy everything. But I can't justify it yet. Kilo mal'a sa'atam. Their sa'ah has not yet filled. In other words, what? They haven't done enough aveirot just as yet. Hold on. Yes. Rashi's going to say the exact same. The Ramban's going to say the same thing. I'll show you the pasuk in a second.
Or maybe they'll have children.
Oh, could be. Could be. Could be. So once their measure is full, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Then he implements. Ki chein mishpatu Elohim. That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates. He's got a plan, but he doesn't always implement the plan right away. Does not implement right. So Shari says, Eretz Yisrael. I want you to look at Bereshit, Perek Tetvav. It is Pasuk Tet Vav. Tet Zayin. It's Perek Tet Vav. So look at the beginning of Perek Tet Vav, just to tell me what the unit is. What's happening here in this Perek Tet Vav? What's happening here? No, it is not. What's happening? The Brit Bein Abitarim. Exactly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making a covenant with whom? With Avraham. What's the essence of the covenant? You are selected to be my designate. And what will I give to your children?
Eretz
Yisrael. Right? Eretz Canaan. And then the Torah reports in Pasuk Tet Zayin, Vidor Rivi'i Yashuvu Hena. I cannot implement my promise right now. I cannot. I can't have you, Avraham, conquer the land right now. Why? Ki lo shalem avon ho emori ad hena. What does that mean?
The Emori didn't fulfill
their avon. Right? They haven't sinned enough yet. In other words,
they will,
but it hasn't happened yet.
He knows when they will.
But Vidor, it's going to, he says, Dor Revi, four generations now, it's going to happen. So, this is troubling on many levels. Number one, it's troubling that if you remember the first Rashi of Sefer Bereshit, Rashi said, why does the Torah not begin with the description of mitzvot? Why does the Torah begin with the creation of the world? So Rashi says, to counter whose argument? The nations of the world are going to say that we're thieves. We're taking their land. We're taking away the Amori, the Kanani, the Chiti. So therefore Rashi says, no. Our response is that you don't own it in the first place. Who owns it? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Good. If that's the correct argument, could not Avraham have taken hold of Eretz Yisrael right there and then? Could not Avraham have taken hold of Eretz Yisrael right there and then? Yes or no and why? Yes or no and why? Why not?
I said
based on Rashi's comment, which he said. What was Rashi say? Why do we describe the conquerors of the world? Because of the fact that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it to who He pleases. You Emori, you Kanani don't own it. Who owns it? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you decided, you're going to live till now. Now I'm getting other tenants to live in this land. Did he then have to wait four generations? No, because what would be the excuse to rid Kanani and Emori if they land? What would be the excuse? It doesn't belong to you. Here, the text seems to indicate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not capriciously decide, you know what? The whole world belongs to me. And as a result, I have a right to bring Am Yisrael anytime I darn please. That's not what it says. I have given the Kanani and the Chiti and the Amori their land. Had they acted appropriately, I would have given Israel Uganda. That's all. Someplace else. But I give them now, I know what these people are. They are not decent people. But I can't take it away then because I have a certain measure. I have a certain set. Once you transgress X volume of chet, then the consequence is this. So even though I have this in mind, I can't implement it yet because based on my own sense of justice, it's not yet the time to do so. Not yet the time to do so. Ah, so this is the famous question that people ask. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is already saying, now, you know what? I know this world is going to be destroyed. But they haven't done enough yet, so I'm going to wait till they transgress another couple of years, then I'll do it. Does that mean tshuva is not possible? Is that tshuva not possible? The answer is, yes, tshuva is possible. And you have to go to philosophy school and see why God's knowledge of an event does not mean that man is precluded with freedom of choice. That's philosophy 101. Predeterminism versus freedom of choice. That's philosophy 101. And the simple illustration that always works for me is the car crash scene. Always works for me. That's the simple explanation. Namely, that advanced knowledge does not mean you're in control of the situation. So I said, always give the same stupid illustration. Look it up in the book.
It's there a lot of times.
What? That's correct. You're standing on West Englewood Avenue. And you see one car speeding up West Englewood, one car speeding up Sussex, and then nobody is applying their brakes. So 5 seconds before the crash happens, you know exactly what's going to happen. They're going to crash. Does that mean you're in control of it? Absolutely not. So foreknowledge does not preclude the two drivers from doing what? From slamming on the brakes. Does not. They have the right to slam on the brakes and try to prevent the crash. The sense of time for HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not in the sense that we understand it today, where everything is sequential. In God's world, the past, the present, and the future are all in the same time zone. So the mere fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that these people in this generation are not going to mend their ways, and that he sees that what's going to happen, they're going to continue to transgress to such an extent that what will I do? I will bring a flood. That does not preclude the choice of man to say, you know what? We're going to mend our ways. How do I know that God gives them a chance to choose? Why did we will see the building of the Teva? How long did it take him to build it? 120 days. What do we need to take 120 days for? Based on the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm giving them a chance to... They will come over and ask, why are you building this idiotic ark? And you will tell them, God is planning to destroy the world, and hopefully you'll mend your ways. So God's knowledge of what's going to happen is not a directive that man cannot change his mind. So number one, God, Ramban tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu already anticipates, based on his vision, what's going to happen, but he doesn't fully implement it until it's your... So what did he do in the meantime? What did he do in the meantime? He didn't want it to go away. He wants to give him a little lesson. What left to show that there is a God in this world? So how does he change? How does he give the message to people that you better change? Shorten your lifespan. You'll be able to recognize your great-grandfather lived 800 years, you're living 120, so you better do something about it.
Isn't that like Hanok, when he shortened his life so he has less choice? Is that?
No, that's something else. That's where he denied him the choice. Denied him.
Shortening our life, he's not denying his choice.
Absolutely not. That's the message. I am angry, beware, and if you don't change, you're going to be gone completely. There's going to be a flood. Completely. That's point number one which the Ramban makes.
The word choice is Baharu. It's so clear that there's so much choice here. Isn't Baharu is they chose?
Yeah, the women who they chose. That's correct. So you can play on that. They had the choice to exercise this or a choice to exercise restraint and not take these women. That's correct. Continues the Ramban. Continues. In Pasuk Bet. B'nei Elohim, b'nei Hasarim v'Hashoftim. Lashon Rashi. Flip the page. V'kachu b'Bereishis Rabbah. This is the way it's in Bereishis Rabbah as well. The Medrash also gives that the first interpretation, the pshat is that these are human beings who are judges and ministers. Im kein, yisaper hakatuv, the Torah is revealing to us, ki hadayanim, Asher lohem la'asot hamishpat b'neihem osim hechamas bigalui ve'ein monea otam. That what exactly got God angry at this particular time? It was the very people who are designed to prevent what?
Justice.
To implement justice, law and order. They are the ones who are doing what? The corruption. They are the ones who are engaged in the Hamas, taking other people's wives. Taking other people's wives. Then the Ramban is going to say something else. And he writes, Ki tovot heina, says Rashi, says the Ramban, Kimo ki tir'e chamos anacha, ki kare kan sipor lefanecha. What does it mean? Ka'asher heina tovot, yikhu otan lohem linashim be'ones. When they saw that a woman was a particularly attractive, what did they do when they identified this particular woman, that she was attractive? Took them be'ones. What does ones mean? With force. They raped them. V'siper hakatuv hechamas. And the Torah reveals what they did. They stole, they plundered, they raped. The Omar Ode, and furthermore the text says, Mikol Asher Bacharu, Lahachnis Hanisuot La'achirim. They also took wives of people who were married to someone else. Eishes Ish. Avolo Hiskir HaKatov HaIsur Bohem Befeirush. Says the Ramban, why didn't the Torah exactly say it? Why do you have to use riddles? What riddles? They saw that they were good. They took all the women who they liked. Why don't you just say it? Black on white. Doesn't really tell us. V'lo nigzar aleim ha'onesh rachel echomas. And their decree was sealed only because of this type of thievery. Lefi shehu inyan muskal einenu Sarich la Torah. Wow. Wow. Einenu Sarich la Torah. This is something which what? Human brains, human intellect can fathom and digest. And you don't need God to what? To legislate it. To spell it out. You don't need the Torah to prohibit it. It's something that human intellect should be able to legislate and enforce. Therefore, how do I reveal to you that this is something that should be understood by everybody? How do I reveal that? By not revealing it. I don't reveal it. Why don't I reveal it? Because it's so abundantly obvious.
What about all the clothes?
Hold on one second. The Ramban here opens up a huge Pandora's box. Again, a very serious philosophical issue. And I frame it the way a Gush professor would. Is there an ethic of this world that exists outside of the ethics of the Torah? Is there a morality that man has to abide, should abide by, that is not necessarily defined in the Torah? Is that possible?
No.
To have a sense of what is right and wrong simply because society dictates that, is there such a concept or not? Shevamit says, Beni Noach, we are going to find something in the text every single time. Sometimes it's a little stretch. Sometimes it'll be black and blue. No doubt. But Chazal believe that in order to prohibit it, God had to legislate. Yes? No. No, but God told them not to eat it.
Right, but they didn't. So now they should know automatically.
Okay, if Tov and Ra is a sense of morality. Okay, perhaps. No doubt. These three words have sparked an enormous debate. Is there such a thing as an ethical imperative that can emerge outside of Torah? Or outside of Torah? I'll give you a perfect example. If you were to take the civilized society today and ask, is slavery ethical or immoral? What would society say today?
Immoral.
It's immoral.
But it's in the Torah.
Okay. So now, I am asking, can man be called upon to accept a certain ethical and moral behavior which is not documented in the Torah? Is it not documented in the Torah?
It seems, according to that example, yes.
Yes, and the Ramban has taken that position, not only here, but in other locations, that it is possible that certain acts, certain types of behavior can be defined as immoral, unethical, without the license, the impromptu of the Torah defining it as such. And there are many. There's a famous midrash which Rashi only quotes half of. So please open up to chapter 20 of Sefer Shmot. And I'll share with you the Rav's interpretation of this midrash, the whole midrash. Rashi only quoted half of it. It is chapter 20, verse 1. The introductory pasuk to the Aseret HaDibrot. It's a pasuk that your child in the third grade should be able to translate without your assistance. And yet Rashi has a comment, long comment on every word of this pasuk. Vayedaber Elohim et kol hadvarim ha'elo lemor. And God said all of the following words. What are they? The Ten Commandments. What's so difficult about this pasuk? Good. So look at Rashi's comment on the word lemor. Rashi has a comment on every word. On Elohim et kol. But I want you to look at Rashi's comment on the word lemor. What does Rashi say on the word lemor? Does he say anything? Milame, what does he say? Good. Rashi's question is, what does the word lemor always mean? To give it over to someone else. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe, lemor. Some conversations were private conversations. Those, it doesn't say the word lemor, it says Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe. But when Moshe is being told something to share with everybody else, lemor is the code word, share it. All of Am Yisrael. Why can't the word lemor mean that in this text? Why can't the word lemor be interpreted in the normal fashion?
Because they were different.
Because they're... No. Because they're what? Because they're all going to hear it directly from whom? Makadosh Baruch Hu. So it should have said, Vayidaber Elohim et kol ha'barim ha'eleh. What's the lemor?
Generations later.
Therefore, Rashi is going to give an alternate reading to the word lemor here. What does Rashi say? Lemor means they responded. How did they respond?
Yes.
They said yes to everyone. Melamech, own it out. Hain, hain. What is hain, hain? On every positive command, they said, yes, we will do. So when God said, kabed et avicha ve et imecha, they said, yes. And Allah. When God said, Lo tirtzach, what did they say? Oh no, we will not kill. That's Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. Rashi quoted half the message. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Melamech, are you owning Al Hain Hain? The Allah Hain. Melamech, are you owning Al Hain Hain? The Allah Hain. They said, yes, we will observe and abide by every positive command, and yes, we will abide by all negative commands. So the Rav asked in a famous snowstorm. He was speaking, I remember this like yesterday, it was 1972, it was the RCA convention, and the Rav always gave the highlight. It was in the Muncie Park Hotel, if you remember the Muncie Park Hotel. So he went, it was a tremendous snowstorm, and the Rav was debating whether we should go or not. He said, let's go. It took hours to get there. I had the comfort and pleasure of taking them in the car. And we got the Muncie Park, and it was Parshas Yisro, right around this time now, Parshas Yisro. And he explained the whole pasuk and every Rashi. And on this he said the following. Any English teachers in the room? What is the difference, ladies and ladies, when you tell your child, I don't want you to play with that boy. I don't want you to be friends with that girl. And your child says, no, I will not be friends with that girl. Or they say, yes, I will not be friends with that girl. What is the difference in the meaning of the two sentences? What's the difference? What's the difference? So the English department will say, when you say, no, I will not be friends, it's that you fully concur with your mother's assessment. Your mother said not to play? No, you're right, 100%. There's a full agreement between the person who issued the directive and the person accepting it. When you say, yes, I will not do so, it's because you defer to their judgment, but you personally think your mother's nuts. Yes, I will honor your request. I will not play, even though I don't agree with your assessment is way off. Way off. The debate here is about mitzvot, which are perfectly rational, like lo tirtzach, lo tignov, and lo tana b'riach eich shaker. How does a man, a human being, approach those mitzvot? Said Rabbi Shmuel, what should you say? No, I will not. Because I don't even need God to do what? To legislate. I fully understand why you should not murder. And in fact, Rabbi Shmuel, had you not legislated this, what would I have done? I would have decided, I would have legislated it without you. And that's perfectly logical. Says Rabbi Akiva, no. Even when it comes to mitzvot, which Sadia Gaon calls sichliot, where the intellect fully comprehends them, you should always say, I defer. You know why I'm going to do it? Not because I understand it, because I defer to your will. Because if you rely on human intellect can conjure up cases where it's perfectly okay to murder. Perfectly okay. That's correct. You have an elderly parent who is suffering terribly, unfortunately doesn't have their mind anymore, and they're in agony. Okay, so we're going to keep them alive. So what does man say? No, just pull the plug already. What's the big deal? Pulling the plug is low tirzah. So there are times, even when it comes to apply what? The mitzvot sichliot, the mitigating factor as to why you have to observe it, says Rabbi Akiva, is not because you understand it. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said no. And once he says no, you can't use your intellect to suddenly say, you know what? You're exempt under these things. Or with lo tiknof, there's a guy who's a homeless person, hasn't eaten in 3 days. And he walks by one of the many food stores that are in Borough Park. One on 39th Street, a big one. There's another one on 40th Street. One on 4th. Big food stores. And he takes one little apple. You're prosecuted? I said, I had 2 meals, 2-3 days. You're prosecuted? The answer was yes. Why? What do you teach the guy? I know you're hungry. Prosecute. You're hungry? What do? Ask. Don't take an apple without anybody's permission. If it was left off only to human evidence, throw the case out. We're not going to prosecute this kind of case. So there are those. The debate really centers between Rabbi Shlomo and Rabbi Akiva as to what is the basis of mitzvot sichliot. Does it emerge from a sense of what? Our intellect? That there is something to legislate even without the Torah? Without the Torah. Or do we say, bottom line, even those which man has the capacity to create out of his own intellect, we don't recognize that authority. What is the only authority that dictates our behavior? HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Tzivu. Here the Ramban is taking sides and saying that there is such a thing as an ethical imperative outside of the words of the Torah. The way the Torah communicated this to us is by just talking in riddles without even specifying it. Because it's so natural to do what? To prohibit it, they don't even have to express it. I don't have to detail it. And the Torah communicates that us by using this rather vague language, Nikol Asher Bacharu, Nikol Asher Bacharu. We'll stop here and we'll continue next Devach with the Nefilim.